Okay, we're up to part two of paying workers on time from the Dayan's desk, number 98. So last week we went over the basic prohibitions that relate to not paying one's worker on time, and the positive commandment of Biyomos Titein Sparo, that one should pay the worker on time. The rabbinic prohibition of Lo Tishah, of not putting off a person, even if it's past the technical time that you were supposed to pay right after the work was finished. There's still an ongoing rabbinic prohibition of putting a person off and delaying payment when you can otherwise render payment. We spoke about to whom does the prohibition apply. We spoke about does it apply to a non-Jewish worker. We brought a machlokas about that, even a machlokas within the Rambam itself, that the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvah seems to indicate that it does apply, at least in terms of the positive commandment of Biyomo Sitein Scharo, and in the Sefer Mitzvos seems to indicate that it only applies to a Ger Toshav, and we mentioned that it certainly should apply at the very least, as the Shevet HaKehasi says, on the level of that it would be a Chilul Hashem if one was not scrupulous about paying even their Gentile workers on time. And we spoke about various exemptions. If a person doesn't have money at the time that the work is finished, that they're not technically in violation, but that they should do whatever they can in order to obtain the money. The Chafetz Chaim's opinion that if one is able to take out a loan for purposes of being able to pay a worker on time, then one is obligated to take out a loan. And we spoke about the question of whether it's appropriate to offset amounts from what is owed to a worker if the feeling is that the worker improperly took some other amounts and one wants to deduct those amounts from the amount that is paid. We quoted the Balatura Malatora, who indicated that this would not be appropriate, and we brought a possible raya from the story of Rapuna and Maseches Brachos, that would also seem to indicate that this is something that might not be appropriate to do, although it is a machlokas haposkim. And we got ourselves all the way up to source 22, which is on the bottom of page 4. So since I didn't want to make it too short today, so I added some additional sources. So now we go all the way to the bottom of page 6. I think previously we only had 5 pages. And we'll discuss some of the remaining topics regarding this issue about Tolin, of the mitzvah of being scrupulous about paying one's worker on time. So source 22 has a very interesting scenario, which is based on the Gemara. And it says that if one does not hire one's workers directly, but uses a messenger to hire the workers instead, so then nobody is going to violate Baltolin, nobody is going to violate the prohibition of not paying a worker on time, because the person, the employer, has not directly hired the worker, and the one who does directly hire the worker is just a messenger who's not the employer. So therefore, nobody has violated the prohibition. Take a look at source 22 from the Shulchan Aruch. Simon Shin Lamites of Zion. Omer l'shlucha, if you tell your messenger, say yischar lipolim, go and hire me workers, yischarcham, uscharam, ve'am alehem, and he hires them and tells them, scharchem al balabayis. The payment is not coming from me. I'm just the messenger. Don't shoot the messenger. This is where the expression comes from. Because the payment obligation is upon the owner, upon the head of the company, and I'm just a messenger.
How do they determine what amount to pay them?
They stipulated an amount based on whatever the Baal HaBayis, whatever the owner told them that they should pay them. So, Ein Shuma Echon Mehem Obel Baal Tolin, nobody violates this. Umiyo Baal HaBayis Obel Mishim Al Tomel L'Meyach Alech Vashof. The rabbinic prohibition of not putting off a worker when one has the funds and has the ability to pay the worker certainly would apply. Meino Torud, but that's only if the person's not otherwise distracted. The rabbinic prohibition is only when it's done nefariously. If a person just forgets, or they're distracted, they're preoccupied with other things, they don't even violate the rabbinic prohibition. It's only when Mekabin the Tchosam that there is a nefarious intention to put off paying the worker, that the rabbinic prohibition would be violated altogether.
Why
so,
don't we say shlucho shlamim k'moso?
So that's a great question. That's a great question that everybody asks. Why don't we just say shlucho shalodim k'moso? In fact, the Gemara has a couple of examples of where people employed this technique. Yehuda bar Meremar would send his Shemaya, he would send his, it sounds like his assistant, his personal assistant, to go and hire the workers so that he would not violate this prohibition. And Meremar and Marzutra would send each other. They would hire workers for each other in order that there wouldn't be the possibility of violating the prohibition. So one question is, what about shlucho shalodim k'moso? Another question is, why were these rabbis working so hard to get out of the prohibition? Isn't it like a good thing to pay your workers on time? You want to fulfill a mitzvah. We have the famous passage that is quoted actually by the Chafetz Chaim. If you look in source 32, the famous passage regarding Rav Ketina. Rav Ketina was criticized by a malach, no less, by an angel, who found that Rav Ketina was wearing some type of a cloak, a sadina, which may have been a night garment that was part of tzitzis. So amale Ketina Ketina, sadina bekaita v'sabal v'siso, you're going to wear clothing in the different seasons of the year that are part of tzitzis, either because they don't have four corners or because they're a night garment. Tzitzis shel techeles matei aleh, what's going to happen to the positive commandments in the Torah that we read about this coming Shabbos in Parsha Shalach, in fact, Vasulam tzitzis, that you're supposed to wear tzitzis. So amalei anshiso ese, just because I didn't perform I violate a negative commandment, just because I'm not performing a positive commandment, I'm going to be punished. So amalei vizmandika riska anshinan, that when there is a special time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry, whenever that time is, it could be a very short time, but it's still a time of day HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry, anshinan, so then you can get punished even for finding some type of a creative way to avoid fulfilling a positive commandment. So we see you're supposed to go out of your way to perform mitzvah. So what's going on over here? So the idea with respect to why the prohibition is not violated is because the pasuk says, the Gemara explains, Rashi explains, the pasuk says, Lo salin pulas sachir itcha ad boker. There's only a violation with respect to not paying your worker on time if it is itcha, meaning that if the person, number one, is working for you, so if the messenger hires the person and they're not working for him, so it's not itcha, they're not working for him, so he doesn't get the violation, and the balabayas doesn't get the violation, as the Bach explains, because it's not a sechir. It says lo salim pulas sachir itcha. So says the Bach in Simen Shin Lamites. I have the Bach over here in source 31. So the Bach explains that lo balabayas. This is the third line in the Bach. Says the balabayas doesn't violate the avera. Labua la lo valtalin eno aver elim kain de karina le sachir gabe. Unless the worker is considered to be his hire. So if the balabayas, forget about shlucho shalodim k'moso, there's no shlichos here, because the word sachir, says the Bach, by definition, according to gzeres hakasav, it's gzeres hakasav, according to the Torah's terminology, there's a requirement that the person be a sachir. A sachir means that they are your hired worker, that you have a privity with them, that you are the one who hired them directly. Otherwise, it's not called a sachir. The Chelkas Binyamin explains, otherwise, the person is called a poel. They're your worker. A sachir means that they are your that your hire, the hiree, the person that you directly had contact with. If you didn't have direct contact with the person, so then the gzeiras hakasav has not been satisfied. The Meshech Chochma says that this is actually something that we can infer from the laning. This is in the Meshech Chochma in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yutes Yud Gimel. So if you take a look at the first source over here, I actually have the trup, right? It says, Lo salin pulasachir itcha ad boker, right? So itcha is a severe, not a severe, a tipcha. Itcha is a tipcha. A tipcha has the connotation that it goes on the previous word. It has to be sachir itcha. It has to be somebody who was hired by you. If it could be any kind of a worker, so then he says that you might be able to use the word sachir, but then it should have been pulas sachir Itchad Boker, then you would have had the tipka under the word Sakhir. But since the tipka is under the word Itcha, explains the Meshech Chachmah, Sakhir Itcha implies that there has to be a direct privity, a direct relationship in the hiring between the Baal HaBayis and the individual in question. It's very, very fascinating. So who's paying? At the end of the day, the Baal HaBayis still is obligated to pay. There is a shlucho sheodom kemoso with respect to the fact that the hire is attributed to the Baal HaBayis. In fact, if you take a look at the Bach again, going to the second line of the Bach in source 31, he says ve'apagav. Even though I know what Emil said, says the Bach that I, you know, did not miss out on this point. So therefore, the employment is a valid employment, obviously, based on the principle of shlucho shel adam kemoso. I'm not oblivious to this point, says the Bach. Neither party can back out of their contractual arrangement based on the shlichus, but nonetheless, when it comes to violating Baal Tullin, we have a gzeiras hakasuv that prevents that violation. Comes along the Tosfos Rid, whom I also added to the source sheet, it so happens, in source 30, explains, what do you mean gzeiras hakasuv? I'm going to give you a sabara as to why this is the case. Remember we said last week that if the worker knows ahead of time that the employer is not going to really be able to pay at the very conclusion of the work because they have to get their money from whenever they sell their wares at the fair, and the fair might be a week or two after the employee finishes their work assignment. So then they go in with the expectation that, of course, they're not going to collect at the very end, the exact very end of the employment period. And there's a built-in mechila. Since there's a built-in mechila, we allow mechila. We allow there to be forgiveness of the debt on the part of the worker to say, it's okay if you don't pay me on time. So then there'll be no violation in that particular case. And so too, the Shachet said, at the beginning of Simen Shin Lamed Tesef Beis, Sifkatan Beis, the Shachet said that a tanai would work. If the employer makes a tanai, a condition, I'm sorry?
It seems that the Navar is expecting it. Therefore, there's no
appeal. If he's not expecting it. Well, I mean, if the right, meaning he would not have accepted, the job in the first place, presumably, if he thought he wasn't going to get paid. But if he knows that, for example, the employer doesn't have any money because the employer lost all of his money, so he's not going to go after the employer for the money. So, on some, I hear what you're saying. It's sort of a combination. Let's say that the employer says at the last minute, he says, I know I was supposed to pay you, and I have the money, but I'm not going to do it. So then the employee says, oh, well, then I guess I don't expect it, but there's still a violation in that case, right? So, you know, it has to be sort of that he accepted, you know, the job in those terms, accepted the job in the terms that he understood that in the event that the employer, through no fault of his own, ends up having no money at the end of the day, that, you know, he's not going to, you know, demand it. So that also would not constitute a violation, but he didn't accept the job with the understanding that if the employer has the money at the end of the job period, it's going to say, ha, 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 I'm not paying you, I'm going to spend the funds on something else. That really would be a violation. So the Tosfos Rid says that this type of case where there is a middleman or middle person who does the hiring is similar to all these other cases when we say that there's some sort of a mechila, there's some sort of a forgiveness, some sort of a deal that is struck. We'll call it a deal that is struck, an understanding that is struck, if you will, between the employer and employee, that the employer is not going to be responsible to pay in this particular case. So, v'taima d'milsa, this is the second line of the Tosfos Rid, very, very fascinating. It says, v'taima d'milsa, the chipachazu po'alin, l'bala bayis kan muga l'hu samchu datayu de l'fra'inu biyome. That when the worker sees the Baal HaBayis, when the worker sees the employer coming to him to hire him, so then he feels, oh, the employer is running the show and the employer is in charge of what goes on over here. I can trust this fellow that he's going to pay me. But if he doesn't see the employer and he just sees some type of a lackey, a second-tier management figure who comes to him, you know, and does the hiring, he doesn't have the same level of confidence that, you know, the employer is going to come through, especially since we're talking about a situation where this middle-level manager figure doesn't say, I'm taking responsibility. He says, no, I'm not taking responsibility. It all depends on the Baal HaBayis. And the employee says, well, where is the Baal HaBayis? I need a job, so I'm going to take the job, but I don't really expect that this guy's necessarily going to pay me on time. So you're right. You know, you could say it's not really forgiveness, it's expectation. That he doesn't have the, but he accepts the job based on that expectation that he's not going to get paid on time.
Yeah. Because of Baal HaBayis here, we can't say that the Elav who don't say Snafsho is...
He's not depending on him. It's not Elav who don't say Snafsho. Very well put. He does expect to eventually get paid by the Baal HaBayis. He does Samki Lui the Perinu, so he knows that he is relying, otherwise he's not going to take the job. He thinks he's never going to get paid, right? I mean, a yeshiva comes along and, you know, hires you to be a teacher or something, and you've heard that this school has a reputation, you know, unfortunately for not paying on time, but you need the money, you're going to take the job, and you understand that you're not necessarily going to get paid on time, okay? So if that's the understanding, there won't be a violation of Baal Tolin. He does not expect to get paid right away. And that's the reason, says the Tosfos Rid, that there will not be a violation of lo tolin in such a case. So this is the idea that the worker knows that the employer is not going to necessarily have funds at the end of the contract, just like the Ramah said, that if there's an understanding that you don't get paid until there is some type of an invoice that gets sent, until there's some type of a reckoning of the exact amounts that have to be reconciled in some fashion, and that there's never a bill that is, you know, sent up until that point in time, or that the payment's not made until that point in time, so that everyone knows that they're not necessarily, the payment's not going to be paid right at the end, and everybody accepts the job according to those terms. What would be a nafka mina? So a nafka mina might be, says the Chelkos Binyamin, Binyamin Kohn, one second, that if the Baal HaBayis, the employer, told the shliach, told the agent at the time that he did the hiring, tell the workers when you hire them that I am definitely going to pay them on time. Tell them I'm definitely going to pay them on time. Well, if I say, like the Bach, that the reason why there's no violation is because of the Gzeiras HaKasuv, that the employer is not the one who's standing there doing the hiring, so he's still not going to violate anything. If I say the reasons like the Tosfos Arid, there's nothing to do with the Gzeiras HaKasuv, it has to do just to do with the expectation that was created at the time of the hire. Well, here, there was a clear expectation that was created at the time of the hire that the one of the main perks of this job is that the workers are going to get paid exactly on time on the day that they finish or the evening that they finish. So then there would be a violation. Yes, question, Sam.
My point, doesn't it really depend on what is the actual behavior of workers and employers?
If
employers generally pay at the end of the week or the end of the job, then that's where the feud comes about. In other ones, they get paid after the
chiyuv comes about at the end of the day or the end of the night when the worker finishes, because that's what the Torah says. But if there is a custom in this industry or this type of job that you don't get paid at that point in time, so then you're correct. So then you would not have the Torah violation in that case. I mean, there's a machlokas haposkim. Let's say that the stipulation is, well, the worker's not going to get paid exactly when the work ends, but the official policy of this business is that you get paid 3 days later. So is there a violation 3 days later? We say, no. According to the Torah, it can only be a violation if it's that day that the work finishes or that night that the work finishes. That's what most poskim say, that there would not be a Baal Tolin violation, and that there would be a rabbinic prohibition for not paying on time, putting off the worker, but you would never have a Torah prohibition in that case. The Me'iri seems to say differently. The Me'iri seems to say that if you do have a set time that is established, that the payment's going to be rendered, even if it's not the actual night or day that the worker finishes, but this is the specific day that's set aside, and then payment is not rendered on that day, you actually could have a violation of lo tal. And he says that with respect to the Yom HaShuk, the marketplace case. But that doesn't seem to be the predominant shita, but there is a shita like that, and that would be consistent with, you know, your explanation or understanding of the halacha. What if you have a shliach in the opposite direction? You don't have the shliach of the employer, but you have a shliach of the employee, the one who is the worker who is making the contract. So would we say the same principle? Like, for example, you have a doctor's office. The doctor is supplying a service, right? So the doctor is a poel. But let's say that the shliach of the doctor is the one who is creating the relationship. You wouldn't think of it in that fashion, but the doctor is really the worker, right? And the one who's going to the doctor, the patient, is really the one who's hiring the doctor. It's really the Baal HaBayis. It's really the owner, you know, so to speak, the Baal HaBayis of this relationship. And it's the secretary in the doctor's office, the secretary in the dentist's office that makes the appointment. So do I say the same thing? Well, since I don't have privity between the parties directly, so you're never going to have a problem about Tolan if the doctor is not paid on time, because it wasn't the doctor who called you directly, it was the secretary of the doctor who called her directly. So if I, again, the Chelkas Binyamin makes the argument that if it's based on the Gzeiras HaKasuv, like the Bach says, so here I don't have the privity of the direct relationship between the employee and the employee. If I say, according to the Tosas Rid, that it's a question of Smichas Das, well, there's certainly Smichas Das. The patient said, yeah, I want to come and, you know, I'm going to pay, you know, and so they said it to the secretary instead of the doctor. Like, what difference does it make? There's certainly the expectation that the patient is going to pay. So then, presumably, you would have the problem of Baal Tolan in such a case.
That would apply for a union also. The owner negotiates with the union on behalf of the employees? The union is a shliach of the employee?
Well, if you're negotiating sort of the terms in that
terms
case, I guess so. Well, again, a lot really depends on sort of what's the authority of the agent in this particular case. Like, let's say, for example, that the agent, instead of saying Skarchem or Baal HaBayis, the agent said, I'm going to take responsibility. So the union representative, I don't know that they're taking responsibility, but if the person is like a manager of a company and they're the human resources director, so sometimes the human resources director would say, I can't do anything without consulting with my boss. But sometimes the human resources director is a very powerful figure. They're allowed to do the hiring and the firing and stipulating all of the terms and conditions and the salaries all by themselves. They don't have to report to anybody. Then, you know, if it's discovered that they're abusing their discretion, they're not doing a good job, maybe they'll get fired. But while they are hired in this position, they have the wherewithal and they have the ability to do all of those things. So then the halacha is, I mean, the Chafetz Chaim talks about this in the Avos Chesed. So then that person is relied upon. They are considered to be the employer, even though it's not their funds. They're considered to be the one who's responsible for rendering payment, and the worker who's hired by them does have a sort of a trust. According to the Tosfos Arid, they would have a trust that they're capable of furnishing the payment, and even according to the Gzeiras HaKasuv, they're really considered to be essentially the one who's doing the hiring. So in that case, you would have a violation of Baal Tolan if the payment was not rendered on time.
There is they're the ones behind the mitzvah of. So is the payroll manager being Mekayim Mitzvah Daraisa every 2 weeks when he does payroll?
Api Pashtus, they're being Mekayim the Mitzvah. The only thing is that they don't have to use their own money. So if the company payroll runs out, they're not obligated to go into their own bank account in order to cover up the shortfall. But they would be presumably fulfilling the Mitzvah. Like the post can talk about this in the context of, for example, a wife who's running the affairs. Like, even if we assume that Kol Shekansu Isha Kana Baila, that on the and Maisa Yadel Baila, that she doesn't have any assets of her own, that everything really belongs to her husband halachically, nonetheless, if she's running the affairs of the house, she's the classic Eishes Chayil that the post can talk about. What's Eishes Chayil? You look at the words of the song that you're singing. Like, she's working away and knitting things and selling things in the marketplace, and everybody, you know, everybody is flocking to her to do business, like Gluckel of Hamelin or something. So that's, you know, our model of the Eishes Chayil. So she is considered to be the employer for these purposes. It's sort of a sidebar question that some of the poskim ask, which is the Chafetz Chaim kind of asked this question. Well, since we say Ishto Kigufo, would we say that the husband also would violate Baal Tolan? She doesn't pay on time, so she violates it, but does the husband also violate it? The Aruch HaShulchan assumes, yes, of course, the husband violates it as well. Ishto Kigufo, it's a package deal. I guess they both are Mekayim the Mitzvah, and they both would violate it. Rav Yashiv is quoted in one place, but this is sort of difficult. I saw it in an article in Tel Talpiot that they had Psakim of Rav Yashiv, and the question that was asked was, if the secretary is the one that is, let's say, on behalf of the Baal HaBayis, on behalf of the owner, in this case it would be the patient, the patient's secretary is making the doctor's appointment, So would there be a violation for not paying on a time? Or do we say, no, the secretary provides this buffer, that it's considered to be this middle level? So Rabbi Yosef said a secretary doesn't make a difference. A secretary is considered to be an extension of the individual whom the secretary works for. Why? I don't know what the words mean. Well, Yashu said, since this is basically the job of the secretary, is to be the one who sets the calendar, makes the appointments and so forth, and is the one who establishes the commitments on behalf of the boss, so therefore they're not considered to be a shliach. What are they considered? They're considered to be a yad balabais, like an extension, like the hand. They're considered to be like just a limb on some level, the balabais. It's difficult for me to understand because the case in the Gemara that talks about how Yehuda bar Meremar tried to get out of this obligation, it says that he sent his Shemaiah. He sent Shemaiah, really sounds like his secretary, personal assistant. Is there a difference between a personal assistant and a secretary? I'm not entirely sure, but that's, we have to reckon with that. That's what Rabbi Yashiv says. Presumably, Rabbi Yashiv didn't mean to say that the secretary is saying, oh, schachem alai, that I'm taking responsibility for payment. I don't think that's what Rabbi Yashiv was saying, but in all of these cases, one has to generally, if there's a question mark, you have to go to Chumah. Why do you have to go to Chumah? Because this particular issue of paying workers on time, even though it's in the realm of monetary matters, it's considered to be an isser. It's considered to be not in the realm of mamonos per se, but in the realm of isser v'heter. It really has to do with a ritual prohibition if you don't pay a worker on time. What's the proof for this? So this is what the Rif says, that there was a question we discussed last week. A person, the Torah, kind of envisions a situation where a person works all day up until the beginning of the night, and then the employer has the entire night time to pay them until the morning. Or they work the entire night until the early morning, until dawn, and then the employer has the entire day to pay them. But what if they finished working in the middle of the day or the middle of the night? So then that's a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. So Shmuel says they finished working in the middle of the day, so the employer gets, you know, a full period of time. So they get the rest of the day to pay them, and then the following night. And so too, if they finish in the middle of the night, so the employer can pay them the rest of the night and the following day. And Rav says, no, they finish in the middle of the day, so you got to pay them before the end of the day. They finish, we discussed this last week, they finish 10 minutes before sunset, assuming that the employer has enough time to get the money together, then the employer is obligated to pay them before sunset, and they don't get the entire next night. So that's a machlokes Rav and Shmuel. Normally, when we have a machlokes, when it comes to monetary matters, the halacha is always like Shmuel. So the Rif says, in this case, we paskin like Rav, and the payment has to be rendered right away. Why is that? Because this is not a machlokes in the realm of mamonos, it's a machlokes in the realm of issa v'hetza, regarding ritual prohibition. We always paskin like Rav, whenever there's a machlokes having to do with ritual prohibitions. So the way to remember that is, v'salachta labonenu ki Ravhu. Then when it comes to things that relate to averos, to avonos, to sins, or doing things which are, you know, might be transgressions, so we always pass them like Rav and not like a Shmuel. So I was reading the Chelkas Binyamin has a nice chapter on this. So he says that maybe since we hold that the whole prohibition is based on Isser, so it's based on the idea of breaking a promise to pay. So since it has to do with breaking a promise to pay, this might be another way of understanding why the Isser doesn't kick in unless I have privity between the employer and employee without necessarily a buffer or a middleman in the middle, because you have a middleman in the middle, so you don't have the direct promise that was made directly from the employer to the employee. So maybe that's why the Isser only kicks in this particular case. Yes, Ira.
So a lot of companies, especially those who use payroll services, will pay their employees a week some amount of time in arrears. So let's say I finish, the payroll ends at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
They'll submit everything to ADP, and then they'll get paid the following week, Thursday or whatever, for pay period ending the previous Friday. Is an employer now who engages in that practice, A, do they rely on the fact that it's a payroll service? It sounds like not. And B, are they engaging in ISR because they've set up a pay schedule whereby they're paying people well after any sort of deadline?
As long as this is the pay schedule and everybody understands that's the pay schedule and the employee does not expect to get paid at an earlier point in time, so then it's going to be perfectly fine according to halacha, because the parties have essentially stipulated that this is going to be acceptable. The advantage of making the stipulation from the employer's perspective, they don't have to pay right away, is that they're never going to violate the Torah prohibition according to most authorities. They at most will will end up violating the rabbinic prohibition. The remaining question regarding using an agent is, what about the tibia? What about, we mentioned last week, that the prohibition does not kick in until there is an actual request for the money. That was source 14, remember? It said from the Gemara, and Daf Kuf Yud Beis and Alfam Bava Metzia, Tana Rabbanan, Lo Salim Pula Sakhi Yakul Apila Lo Tavo. I might think even if the worker didn't ask for the money, the employer is going to violate the prohibition. Tama Loma Itcha the Daitcha. That it says Lo Salim Pula Sakhi Itcha, that it has to be that you know that the Sakhi, it's Itcha, it's with you, you know that the employee is asking for the money and you're still not paying the money. So, and we said that sometimes there's sort of an implied ask if there is a specific day that it's every single week or every single month in which it's been stipulated that the employee is supposed to get paid. But the question is, what is does the what if the tevia, what if the request for the money is rendered not by the employee but by the employee's assistant or the employee's messenger? The employee sent a messenger saying, "Hey, you didn't pay me. I want my money." So if, let's say, it's not the worker, you hired somebody to do work in your house, and they send a messenger saying, oh, you know, you didn't pay the person, a collection agency calls you up. So is that considered to be that you've received a request from the person himself or herself, and then now you would violate the prohibition? So Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes a halachos ketanos, that says, well, no, the tevia also has to come directly from the person. If it came from a third party, so then you're not going to violate the prohibition. Rabbi Akiva Eger says, in no uncertain terms, he says, no way. I don't, that can't be. Rabbi Akiva Eger says, I completely disagree with that. It's no nearly. He says that it doesn't matter how the request is rendered. If you think about it, why is it that we require a request? So the Chafetz Chaim explains that otherwise there's going to be an assumption that if the employee didn't request the money, so he's Michael, so he's not so important to him. So that's why the prohibition would not kick in. But says the Chafetz Chaim, let's say that there's a reason that you know that the employee can't request the money because some accident, they were in a car accident, and you know that they're out of commission, and therefore that's why they can't come to you to ask for the money. So then says the Chafetz Chaim, you're obligated to affirmatively walk over. The person's not even capable of coming to you to collect their paycheck, so you have to go to the hospital, wherever they are, and you have to hand them the check directly, because the assumption is that they were not mochel, because it was an onus, it was circumstances beyond their control, and you have to make the money available to them. You can get the word to them that the money is available, you know, to be picked up, but if they can't pick it up, so then you would have to actually bring the money over to the individual. You would need a raya, you would need some sort of a proof that there is a mechila. So if the person, the employee in question, the worker, sends a messenger to say, please pay me, so that's a pretty good raya that they want to get paid, and that would be all right. But what about, yes? A what arrangement?
Yes. I have a business, and in order to generate some capital, I sold my accounts payable to XYZ Corp. They're going to give me automatically 60 or 70 cents on the dollar, but then I'm going to legally assign the right for them to collect the invoice.
Interesting.
A lot of medical practices are using this now. Other companies are using this. It's called factoring.
Uh-huh.
How would that fall into this? In other words, you're not getting my invoice. I send you one.
It's not really a poll. It's more of a reading.
Who's supposed to get paid? Who's rendering the service? Who's supposed to?
So ABC Factory Company. I render you services.
Yeah.
I tell you up front that ABC Corporation is going to bill you.
Okay.
ABC Corporation gave me 60 cents on the dollar for that invoice. Their profit for taking the risk is that 40 cents on the dollar.
Okay.
That's their spread.
It doesn't matter. So you could say that's the shliach, but they're indicating to you that I want to get paid. I want to get paid, you know, through this company, but I still want to get paid. So I think that would be the case that Rabbi Kiva Eger is talking about, that would be a good enough indication that the request is being made for payment. So why then, though, did these Rabbanim, Yehuda bar Merema, Amemer bar Zutra, why did they want to get out of the Torah obligation? So Tosus explains in Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, they were afraid that they would be told. They were afraid when the time would come to pay, they would get distracted, preoccupied with something else, and therefore they would inadvertently violate the prohibition. They didn't want to violate the prohibition, but this was a way to prevent and to protect themselves from violating the prohibition of lo selling, because maybe they would just be forgetful and turn out that the employee finished doing the work, they were busy doing something else, and a couple of hours later it's the end of the day and they just didn't end up paying. So this way, by hiring the workers through an employee, they were able to avoid the commission of an iser. But nonetheless, the Shach says this. When the Shach said you make a tnai that, with the employee, that you're not obligated to pay exactly on time, the Shach says, but titain lo kishiyitva im tuchal. But nonetheless, if you would have the ability to pay the person when the work comes to an end and they want their money, so of course you should pay them, and it would probably still be a kiyum, a fulfillment of the positive commandment, biyomo sitein skaro. That's why I saw an article by Rav Yehuda Silman in the Yotzer Mishpat on this particular topic. So he said, would you still have the fulfillment of the positive commandment, biyomo sitein skaro, if the person was already meichel? The person was already meichel. So he said, what do you mean the person was meichel? Were they meichel that they never want to get paid? They were meichel that you don't have to pay exactly on time. That's assuming that you don't end up paying them on time because you're distracted. But let's say you show up right when they finish working and you have a big fat paycheck for them and you're ready to pay them. Guess what? They're not going to be meichel anymore. That we have to accept the money. So he says the mechila goes away. This ois mechila. So therefore he says it's a mechila that's a suspended mechila. They're meichel if in the event that you're not going to be able to pay. You're able to pay. They're not meichel. So of course you'll be able to fulfill the positive commandment of biyomo sitein
sechoro. How does the Shemitah Prusa affect that? I hired you in the beginning of Elul, or let's say in before the 3 weeks I hired you to do some work in my house. I got distracted. Sudden Rosh Hashanah comes and goes. It's a Shemitah year. I didn't do a fourth call. Right. I'm ready to pay you, but the debt halachically doesn't exist.
Well, that's only if it's a debt, sort of a loan transaction. A poel, a worker, is still entitled to get paid, unless it's been converted into a loan transaction. But otherwise, if it's just wages, then they would presume they would still, you know, be entitled to be paid. Right. But anyway, you do a prosbul and everyone gets to get paid anyway. Yes. It's an excellent point. In all of these cases, the workers are not being moichel, they're not waiving the right to get paid. They're just saying if you don't pay on the first 24-hour period, the first 12-hour period, that you be at that I finish the work, so I'm waiving my ability to require that of you. But of course, they're insisting on getting paid. We said some of these violations, like Lo Sashok and Kovesh Skarsafir, that's only if you end up not paying altogether. Those are the more serious, I shouldn't say more serious prohibitions, but those are sort of the more long-term prohibitions. Kovesha, that you just put the person off and you never end up paying them. And Lo Sashok, where in kind of like a fit of cruelty, you say, oh, I'm never ever going to pay you. So that would obviously be something that nobody would agree to stipulate to. So they're only stipulating to the possibility that maybe they're not going to get paid exactly on time. But in terms of the employer's desire to fulfill the positive commandments of paying on time, so that, says the Chafetz Chaim, that's exactly why, if the person does have the funds, even if technically they could have gotten out of it, but if you do have the funds, if you have the possibility of obtaining the funds, even taking out a loan, says the Chafetz Chaim, so he bases himself on that Gemara with respect to Rav Katina. He says that you should do everything in your power to put yourself into the position where you will fulfill this highest level obligation, highest level mitzvah of paying your workers not only altogether, but paying them on time. Take a look at source 33, which should not, deceive you into thinking that we're finishing. Okay, so Mimadi Isa ben Menachos, that which it says in Gemara Menachos about the Rav Katina, the Sarach Adon Lishtadil Achnis is Asma Shem Bechuya Be Mitzvah Ve'ed and Rischa and Shinin Alzeh, that when there's anger up high in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then people are punished for not fulfilling positive commandments. So Hevi Atzlin Dechiyuv, that he didn't bring himself to the positive commandment of wearing tzitzis. Hu Adin Minyanenu, same thing is true with respect to paying the wages of your workers on time. That Sarach Lishtadil Asig Mos, that you're supposed to do everything in your power to try to get money to pay them exactly on time. To pay exactly on time. And that's why, and he says, V'esha, the gamik tzadah dinu mechuyav, and maybe he says that's even from Exeris Akasu, because what does it say in the Pasuk? Timikri, because it says, Yesh itcha, because it says, Lo salim pula sakir itcha adbokir. If it's with you, kimen shiyachal ha'asig maos v'kal, if it's easy for you to obtain the money, v'lifro'alo, then you're obligated to do so. And he brings a raya from what Rashi says on that Pasuk. Rashi alachumish says, Lepikach zman sakir yom b'layla, smir zman sakir layla b'yom, arbiyas ha'shemesh. He says you have to pay the day worker during the nighttime, the night worker during the daytime. L'fishinina Torah zman l'balabayas ona, because the Torah gives an ona a period of 12 hours, either daytime or nighttime. L'bakesh mos, so says Rashi, l'bakesh mos, to request money. It sounds from Rashi, even if the person didn't have money, to begin with, at the beginning of the time period, they're actually obligated to go out and to try to request money from others. Even if the person doesn't have the money readily available in their own home. So that's the bottom line as to why the Chachamim did this. The Chachamim did this because they wanted to avoid an inadvertent transgression with respect to not paying workers on time. So therefore, they hired through a middleman. But if they would have the wherewithal or ability to fulfill the mitzvah on time, obviously that is something that they would readily do, something that the Chofetz Chaim very strongly urges. Now, based on the fact that we go to Chumrah, since this is essentially in the realm of Issa V'Heter, so we have the discussion in the Aruch HaShulchan, this is in source 24, there's a machlokis whether the obligation to pay on time applies to the rental of real estate, to karka. So some say, well, because the Torah says, be'ar tzecha, it said, lo sa'ashok sakhir ani ve'avyon me'achecha me'gircha asher be'ar tzecha, so that means only things that are on the land, but not the land itself. Lo ar tzecha atzma, not the land itself. And others say, what are you talking about? It says, itcha, sakhir, lo talin pula sakhir itcha, that anything where you have gained a service from somebody else, even renting their real estate, and that is with you, you have personally gained from it, you have an obligation to pay. So because of the fact that this is essentially a machlokis, which way do we go? And this is a possible prohibition, so therefore we're machmir about this. However, what we would say the following, which is that let's say that you only have enough money to pay a worker who just worked for you, or to pay for your real estate rent for the month. So who gets put off? Who should get paid last? Who should get paid first? So if you just, the worker just finished their work right now, and you just completed your rental period right now. So it says the Chokas Binyamin, since this is a machlokas, where the karka is included within the absolute obligation to pay exactly on time for the rental of karka, but it's clear that you have to pay a worker exactly on time, so the worker comes first. If you only have enough funds for one, you pay the worker as opposed to the karka. Another area where we go the Chumrah, says the Gemara, in the Sugya and Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, is with respect to a kavlan, like a contractor. I gave my dry cleaning to the dry cleaners to clean, and they are holding it for me, and I'm waiting to get it back. I gave my watch to the watchmaker to fix. I'm waiting to get my watch back. So do I say uman kone sheva kli, that if they're working on my clothing, they're working on my watch, that somehow they make like a kinyan, that it's considered as if it now belongs to them. If it now belongs to them, so then I'm not paying for work, I'm paying for an item. I'm paying to purchase an item. If I pay to purchase an item, there's no violation of lo salim pula sakhir itcha boker. The violation is only for workers or for people who rent my property, real estate, or personal property. But there's no violation if I buy merchandise and I'm supposed to pay. I'm supposed to pay. Mr. Seema said, I'm supposed to pay. But there's no violation, no special mitzvah about paying directly on time. That's why when we quoted last... What? Well, no, let's say somebody sells me an item. Let's say, I'm not talking about my dry cleaning. Let's say it's some other item. I mean, or I give some materials to a craftsman to take those materials and to build a beautiful desk out of the wood that I'm giving the craftsman and so forth. But if it's my materials, so then it's a machlokas, is it considered to be theirs, that they were koneh, the new object? and now they're selling it to me, or is it considered to be, no, it was always my materials, and therefore I'm just paying for their work. If I'm paying for their work, says the Gemara, so then the violation of lo selling comes into play. If it's considered like they acquired it, and I'm buying it from them, so then lo selling doesn't come into play. We spoke about the case, for example, from the Gemara in Brachos, where, not the Gemara in Brachos, the Gemara in Yuma, where we spoke about how Rav, when he would go to the butcher shop, if he wouldn't pay the money right away, it would be a Chilul Hashem. So he said, it's not a violation of Lo Solin. It would just be, you know, it would be a violation of Chilul Hashem, desecration of God's name. Why is it not Lo Solin? So the simple answer is, he was buying merchandise. He was buying meat. So it's the same thing. If you're buying an item that, let's say that I go to a store and I want to buy furniture, I didn't give the materials for the furniture, that the furniture maker made the furniture, now I want to buy it. So that does not enter into the realm of Lo Solin. So when I give materials to a craftsman to make an object, to make an item, so we paskin for purposes of this halacha, it's a machlokas, whether uman kona sheva kli or not, but for purposes of this halacha, since we're always worried about the iser, the potential ritual prohibition of lo salin pula sachi itcha ad boker, so we say we assume that the craftsman does not purchase the materials, they always belong to me, in which case I'm not buying anything from him or her, but rather I'm paying for a service. I'm paying for a service, so then there is going to be a violation if I do not pay exactly on time.
Are teachers my workers? Why take tuition? If I don't pay the school my teachers who are teaching my kids, is that at all within this realm of mitzvah or nothing?
One of the classic cases that the poskim speak about in terms of lo salin is when it comes to like a rebbe who's teaching. So some say, oh, maybe it shouldn't apply because you're not paying them from the wages unless they're like a rebbe or small children and you're paying them also for babysitting purposes. But otherwise, it's chab b'tolo. You're not supposed to charge for teaching Torah. I mean, you could charge for teaching math and science, but you're not supposed to charge for teaching Torah. So maybe since it's only schar b'tolo, that doesn't count. But all the poskim say, no, that's not true. Schar b'tolo is also payment, and therefore that has to be rendered on time. Unless, and they talk about this not only in the context of some of the yeshivas, but they talk about it in the context of the kolim as well. It's a lot of literature about paying the kolim members on time. Is also, you know, part of this sugya of paying workers on time, that if there is sort of an expectation that it's known that it's hard for them to make payroll every single month and you might not get paid exactly on time. So if that's the expectation, here, you know, Moshe Menachem, this is probably a good example where you're not necessarily, you don't want to be Michael, but that is your expectation, that you know that in this institution they don't pay you on time. So then there's not going to be a violation of Lo Solin. But if there is a commitment and there is an expectation, then there really could be a violation of Lo Solin.
Well, so, the school, I don't think you have privity between the person who's actually doing the work and the person who's paying you. The school in between.
But maybe the school is providing a service to you, right? Maybe the school on the whole is providing the school is providing an education to you.
So that's an interesting question. If I have an obligation to pay tuition every month.
It's a great question.
Yeah,
it's a great question about the importance of paying the tuition on.
From Chase to the teacher's wallet, it's my salary being my payment of tuition that enables the school to pay the teachers. Am I over this, or if I pay my tuition later?
If there is an expectation to pay on time and you're receiving a service, this would be, it would seem to me, this could be a service that would come within the category of Lo Solin, unless there's an expectation otherwise.
They demand checks up front for the year, no?
And you could say this for every single unit. Well, one principle that we have is Ein Skivus Mishtalemes Ela Besof, that you only have to pay when the work has been rendered. But here you could say it's rendered in 1 month units, every single month that they render the services that they render, and then you're supposed to pay for the services. It's a very, very good point. Now, the Mishnah Berurah brings a controversial idea and this is in Siman Reish Mem Beis, where he's talking about Hilchos Shabbos, interestingly enough. This is in the Be'er Halacha in 29, okay, source 29, where he talks about, this is the Mishnah Berurah, where he says, if I have a worker to pay, and it's a question of buying provisions for Shabbos, the worker comes first because that's a din d'oraisa. While buying food for Shabbos, to have owning Shabbos is only divrei kabbalah. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu. And even if I say it's a mitzvah essay, a mikra kodesh or Shabbaton, but that's a positive commandment. But when it comes to not paying a worker on time, it's both a positive commandment and a negative commandment. So the worker comes first. But then he has the following interesting idea, and he says that v'chol dvareinu He says, if the worker is the type of worker who is fashioning an object or fixing an object for me, let's say bringing me my dry cleaning or something like that, I'm only obligated to pay the worker when they bring the dry cleaning or they bring the watch that they repaired to my house. Otherwise, the Baal HaBayis has a great idea if I want to use the money that I have for my Shabbos food, so then I could just decline the dry cleaning. I could just say, oh, it's okay, you can hold on to the dry cleaning for another couple of days, no problem. Shalom the Kabbal Mimenu. I don't need my watch today. I don't carry anywhere in the Erev on Shabbos. For us, ain't no over, and then the person does not transgress. Even if the watchmaker or the dry cleaning says, come and pick it up. This is why our dry cleaners, they come to the door. They're very smart. But otherwise, he says, even if the pole says, come and pick it up, and you say, nothing doing. I'm not picking it up. So then he says that there would be no violation, and he quotes of Rabbeinu Yohanan and Baba Metzia, who basically says that as well. So the truth is that not everybody agrees with that chiddush of the Be'er Halacha, because there are three different reasons given why the Gemara indicates that if the worker who was working on an object for you has not returned it yet, you're not obligated to pay. According to the Smaz, because the object counts as like a mashkon, it counts as collateral. According to the Ksos, it's because it's lo igia zmano. Until the time that the object is actually, that the craftsman was working on, is returned to you, it's not considered like the time of the skivus has come to an end, and therefore you're not obligated to pay yet. But
don't you have a Geneva Stas problem? Hey, I drop off my watch, it'll be ready Tuesday at 5. Tuesday, I have no intention of picking it up Tuesday at 5.
Well, yes, it's a Geneva Stas.
It's a
Geneva's Das problem. If you promise that you'd pick it up a Tuesday at 5, but if he just said it's going to be ready Tuesday at 5, then it's not Geneva's Das because you didn't promise to pick it up. That's the case that we're talking about over here. You didn't promise to pick it up. You just are delaying. He's saying it's ready, and you're saying it's okay. Hold on to it longer. I'm not ready to pick it up. So so why is it that you're not obligated to pay yet? So again, the Sma says because the person has the equivalent of their payment with the item itself, because it's like a mashkon, it's collateral. And the Tso says, well, because it's lohi giyazmano. Until the object is dropped off, it's not considered like you have the unit of time in which the worker has worked has come to a conclusion yet.
To say it's collateral is not good because I can't use the collateral.
Ah, that's a very good point. So let's just go through the three reasons. You can't use the collateral if I say that the basic principle of paying a worker on time is what? A love who knows it's nafshel, that depending upon you to eat, to survive, so you can't eat a watch, and you can't eat the dry cleaning. So it's a very good point. And Labush says, or at least the person would have to go and they would have to sell it for money, and then first use that for food, but that wasn't what the deal was. And Labush says that since the talis, or whatever the object is, he's talking about a talis, is in the hands of the uman, of the craftsman, so it's presumed that the person is mochel, the person forgives receiving the payment because they have this other item that is still in their possession, so they're not going to be demanding of the payment until they have actually given it to you. So according to the Labush's reason, it would follow that the halakha of the Mishnah Berurah might not be applicable in a case where the worker says, I'm not mochel. I want you to pick up the item because I want my money. So if he says, I want you to pick up the item right now, I'm not mochel. So then, according to the Labush, all bets are off, and now there is an obligation to pay. According to the first two reasons, according to the Ksos, well, he's still holding on to the item, so therefore it's not payday yet, it's not time to pay yet. According to the Sma, it still counts as a mashkon, but others say that, what do you mean it counts like a mashkon? There's no, like the Aruch HaShulchan says, that the main, as we saw in Siman Shin Lamed Vav, that we discussed last time, the main hakvada, you need to be able to pay a worker most mizumanim. You need to be able to pay actual money. Anything that's not actual money is not good enough from a worker's perspective because it doesn't feed the children. It doesn't take care of the bodily needs of the poel. So the Aruch HaShulchan, if you take a look at source, I think I have it here. This would be source 26, okay? Also one of the added sources. So the Aruch HaShulchan takes issue with this psak of the Mishnah Berurah, without necessarily calling him out by name, but he says that if you take a look after the bracketed phrase about four lines in, if the object has already been given, mechayev l'sholem, im yesh lo mos, eino moro mashkon. So first he says, I don't agree with this whole mashkon idea. The time of the skim of foolish bekram, b'nei she'elev u'nosei esnafsho, she'zeh ani sorach lechol. The ani needs to be able to eat. He can't eat his watch, right? Okay. Umay yaseh b'hamashkon. What's he supposed to do with the mashkon? You can't, you know, you can't eat couplings. What?
Even if the mashkon was food, you can't eat it.
Well, there's a little bit of machlokas. Let's say that you decide that you're going to pay the worker in chitim and seorim, like in wheat and barley. So the Sma says, well, wheat and barley is pretty good because you can eat wheat and barley. So Shach says, but maybe you don't want wheat and barley. Maybe you want meatballs. Therefore, you have to be able to give money so the worker can buy, you know, whatever kind of food the worker wants to buy.
And I bring you the materials and make me a cake. I don't expect you to eat my cake.
Right.
It's even more complicated.
Even though it's a mashkon, I don't know if you can't eat the mashkon.
So that's exactly what the Shach says.
It's
along similar lines, that's what essentially the Shach says.
If I'm going to hold, like the chatzot, that I'll hold on to this until you come to pay it, well, that works for a watch or some dry cleaning. That cake's got a lifespan of a couple of days.
This is also true. Maybe you're going to want, you know, noodles that will last, you know, much longer or whatever.
But even on the other side of it, want to say, look,
or you know,
the type of way is excused because you're holding my product as collateral.
Okay, so let's.
That doesn't work for food.
So that's exactly what the Aruch HaShulchan says here. Be'achi yasek lamos, you're up. And until he's going to get the money, he's supposed to starve. B'kimen she'esh lamos, mezumen chayev litein lo. Rather, if the person has ready-made funds, then he's obligated to give him the ready-made funds. Me'en lamos, he's sparred the eno over. And it's only if he doesn't have money. So we already said he doesn't violate the prohibition. Okay, and now just jump to the last two words on the line. It says the Aruch HaShulchan, if you had a craftsman who was working on an object for you, dry cleaning, whatever it is, a watch, with a kabel skull, but he wants to receive his payment, you don't want to receive the item, and you have money, near the over. The Aruch HaShulchan says he thinks that you still violate the prohibition. So we have a clear machlokas here, interestingly enough, between the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan on this particular point. Again, we generally assume that when it comes to this particular issue of Baal Tolin, that since it is in the realm of Issa V'Heter, that we would go the Chumrah with respect to these issues. Yes, Ruben.
Why is the chiyuv to pay for, let's say, the watch repair at the time you pick it up and not the time you complete it?
So we gave the three explanations as to why that is. Either it's because until it's actually delivered, that's not considered to be the end of the work. It has to be actually delivered, so you get the benefit of having it in your possession once it has been transferred from the craftsman to the customer. Or because we say that since they have a mashkon, so in a way they've already been paid because they can just hold on to this as collateral, or because there's an implied mechila. Yeah.
It's just a custom that that's how the transaction normally goes. You don't have to come immediately after it finishes the work.
But because you don't actually have it, so therefore it's considered like, in a way, the unit of work has not been completed. This would not be true, for example, if it was just sort of a rental, that, you know, somebody, I'm renting your property as opposed to you're holding on to my item. I'm renting your property, so even if I haven't returned it to you, I rented your shovel, it doesn't matter if I haven't returned the shovel, if the rental period comes to an end, everybody agrees that I have an obligation to pay you right away. It's only because you're holding my item that I say, well, I haven't received the item, so why should I pay you? So then the question is whether I can do this sort of cute or interesting, clever technique to say, well, I haven't gotten the item because I've chosen not to pick it up, even though you really want me to pick it up. So that's why I said that it's really smart that if the dry cleaner is just sort of, you know, ring on your doorbell and they, you know, hand you the item, so then you don't really have this excuse anymore. Plenty to discuss, but we'll just touch upon one more thing. Which is, what if the payment was not rendered in time? So then, do you have the right, if you are the worker, to receive the unpaid wages plus interest, because you've lost the time value of money during this period of time? So most of the poskim say this would be a problem of ribbis, it would be a problem of prohibited interest, but there is an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer Mitula that's quoted by the Or Zeruah that says otherwise. who says that, that because of the fact this was not a loan transaction and it was not a stipulated amount, it's just that the person ended up losing the value of money over time because the worker wasn't paid on time, that it wouldn't actually constitute interest. There is a back and forth that the Bris Yehuda quotes on this particular topic as well from the Tshuvas Maimoni. And the bottom line is that even though is that the Rav Ezra Batsri, if you take a look at source 20 something, source anybody 23, okay, L'siyam HaPerek. Says L'siyam HaPerek Atzayin Shema Sheposkim Ayom Bati Mishpat Ekev Alona Skar Ribis Yesh Mizem Mishim Isser Ribis L'shaik Mizem Minag Amidino Tonight. You can't say that it was stipulated up front that the worker would get paid compensation by getting interest payments for the unpaid wages over time, because with an Isser Ribis, that's also a ritual prohibition that you can't contract around. You know, in the case of Halon Eskar, you could say, okay, you can contract around to say that you're not going to be makbid, but here, if you're actually paying the money, that's a ritual prohibition you can't contract around. Sheb Isser Lo Shayach Minogo Tonight, Ulam Ashiyesh Lodim Mazehu Mitzara Pichusim. But he says that nonetheless, there is time value of money, that there's inflation. He quotes the Rabbiya, the Or Zeruah quotes the opinion of the Abi Ezri, who's the Rabbiya, who says that this would not constitute prohibited interest. Missing above there. If you look in the Or Zeruah, he very strongly and forcefully disagrees with that opinion and says that it is ribis, but he says, the Beis Din has the right to make a pshara to require some additional payment, call it for damages or whatever, based on these considerations. Yes?
This phrase, should be Yisr lo shayach minogo tanai. We've been saying that if you make a tanai in advance for the lo salin, and you're saying we paskin like Rav, that this is a case of Yisr, so we're making a tanai in a case of Yisr, so why don't I rid this?
Because what you do is that you do away, in this particular case, it's not the same thing as ribis. Ribis, you could say, I'm going to forgive ribis. I'm going to say that, you know, you're paying me ribis, but I'm moichel. So that you can't do because it's still ribis. If there would be a violation of lo salin, you wouldn't be able to transgress it. The thing is that it's not going to be lo salin, pula sachir itcha. It's not going to qualify as a violation of lo salin if there is an agreement between the parties that you don't have to pay exactly at this point in time because you don't have the funds, because it's difficult for you to pay. So then that's not considered to be itcha anymore. It's not considered to be that there's an expectation of a payment of money that you're keeping itcha, that you're keeping with you. If there is an agreement that you can put it off, so then it no longer satisfies the very definition of lo salin. That's why the poskim say that when the shach said that you can stipulate there won't be a that it's okay to violate lo salin, it can't be that that's what the shach means. So the poskim reinterpret the shach, and they say, that's why I think of Sternbach and his Jewish reinterpret. He says it can't be because you can't say, oh, it's okay to violate lo salin any more than you can say it's okay to violate ribis. You say that you're going to forgive the requirement for me to pay on time, so therefore there won't be lo salin. Right, exactly. That's the way that it works. Okay, we'll stop here. Mr. Hashem, everybody should have a wonderful summer, and I look forward to seeing you when we begin the next season. Okay. Yeah.